Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration. Collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
Well, welcome back to Face to Face. Thank you for listening and for joining us here on the show. And if you're here for the first time, we trust that you will enjoy the interview and go back and listen to others. There's so much to choose from, over 600 published interviews, certainly under this umbrella, but many others that I've done over the past, we're talking 10 or 11 years now. Our next guest is Tanya Hessen-Shea. She actually has been a guest on the show before. I couldn't believe she was first here with us on 2015, episode 135. How crazy is that? Talking about another important film that she made called Drone. You might want to check out not only the film, but the interview as well. That's episode 135. But today we're talking about her new film. And I'd say once again, another important and very compelling and often quite disturbing film called Praying for Armageddon. It is a political thriller, really, that really is peeling back some layers on the power and the influence of primarily U.S. fundamentalist evangelicals. And she ties it into their aim to fulfill the Armageddon prophecy, as it's so called. It's a journalistic piece. This is a feature doc that's actually playing at Hot Docs, by the way, hotdocs.ca. Check it out for showtimes. If you can't see it there, they'll be showing it online as well. I'm pretty sure about that. And I'm guessing there's going to be a release of this down the road, theatrical and or video on demand. So stay tuned. But we talk about evangelicalism in the U.S. We talk about how faith is being abused and about the power of persuasive language. We talk about extremes, on any part of the political or the religious or the academic spectrum. They can certainly, religion for sure, but many, many other things can turn to fundamentalism pretty quickly. And I think Tanya is so right to point out this notion of our addiction, it seems, to certainty. We talk about empire and power, and we raise questions around critical thinking and how important it is to be partaking in that, but also to be teaching it and to be exercising it in our day-to-day lives and at our schools and in our classrooms and with our colleagues and our family as well. And so often, it seems, these systems can spiral towards violence. And for Tanya, her hope is found in the awareness. She has a firm belief in the power of the people. So check it out. Hope you'll enjoy the interview. I had a fascinating and fun and engaging time with Tanya talking about her new film, Praying for Armageddon. Again, it's at Hot Docs, hotdocs.ca. And don't forget to find out more about what I'm up to, davidpecklive.com. For more information about my writing and my speaking, reach out if you need to. But also facetofacelive.ca for so many more interviews. Both of those addresses get you to the same place, and you'll be able to do hopefully a little bit of exploring there. We do have some changes coming up. I'll keep you posted about that as well. Going to continue on, but we're looking at a refresh and maybe even a new approach for Face to Face. So stay tuned on that. If you are listening and you are enjoying, please leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Certainly iTunes is a critical one. Getting those reviews there do help move us up through the digital line, so to speak. There's a lot of podcasters out there these days. But if you're watching and or listening on YouTube, give us a thumbs up there, subscribe, and we would appreciate that so much. Thanks again for listening. And my name's David Peck, and you're listening to Face to Face. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest here with us today on the show, and a returning guest, which seems kind of crazy, a guest returning from over 8 years ago, a guest episode 135. How crazy is that? We're now in the 600s. We have Tanya Hessen-Shea here with us today to talk about her new film, Praying for Armageddon. Tanya, thanks for joining us here on Face to Face.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be back.
It's good to be back. Yeah, feels like yesterday, doesn't it, Tanya?
Yeah, well, you know, time flies, and to think that it was that long ago, it's kind of mind blowing. No,
it really is. It's just you know, I said to my wife, Elizabeth, we were out walking our dog recently, and I don't know why this hit me, but we came across kind of a weird situation that involved a dog, another dog, and an ambulance, and so on. And I said, you know, it's amazing all the things that happen to us that we don't remember. I don't know why I had that observation at the time, but isn't it interesting what has happened in your life, my life, the world since we last spoke that has made us the people we are today? To me, that's a fascinating question, and maybe the subject of a documentary in the near future. But we'll see. We'll see. But listen, thank you for taking the time in your film, Praying for Armageddon. Congratulations. It's going to be appearing at Hot Docs here in Toronto, and hopefully everyone's going to get to see this film. I mean, Tanya, tell us a little bit about that, maybe that 8 year journey to get to this conversation today. Congrats on the film. I really love the film. It's I hate saying films like this are entertaining, but it really was entertaining. It clipped along, it kept my interest, all of those things, but it's also really deeply disturbing. And as you start to peel back some of those layers, the subtitle of the film is, let me get this right, When Biblical Prophecy Fuels Political Power. Can you bring us up to today a little bit on the making of?
Yes. It has been a wild journey. When we started developing this film 8 years ago, you know, it was before Trump and Pence and COVID. And to just see how everything rolled out, you know, and when you make a film of this scope, you know, I mean, we go deep on my team. So we were studying the Bible. We were really, you know, studying and investigating the political system and the architecture that the religious right sort of has built in the States. And to see it all sort of manifest during the Trump years was pretty dark and revelatory in a lot of ways. And to be honest, like there were times where we're like, wow, you know, because for, you know, the Armageddon prophecy, basically the essence of it is that during sort of the doomsday battle, which is the final battle, Jesus will come riding from the heavens on a white horse. And for a while, you know, we're like, this is not going to happen for a while. We have a lot of time. And then Trump and Pence, you know, when they came into power and moved the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, we're like, wow, you know, we got to get up to speed and pick up the cameras because things are really starting to roll out. And seeing sort of the power and the influence of the fundamentalist evangelicals in the US during this period was also kind of chilling. You know, so in the film, we follow people from the grassroots that are preparing for a holy war. And then we see how their faith is being abused or and used by the megachurch empires. And then to see sort of the evangelical voting bloc also lift up Trump, who for many of the people that we feature in the film was seen as being lifted up as a president by God. And for them, Trump, not that they saw him as one of them, like a true believer, but he was the instrument of God and the prophecy. So when also they were able to then put a lot of pressure on Trump and Pence to move the embassy to Jerusalem, things really just started unfolding.
It's amazing what you can justify, I suppose, when the puzzle seems to start to take shape. And I get that sense from much of evangelical ism in the West. I'm going to say in the West, maybe not just in the U.S., but certainly you focus on the U.S. But what is that Reverend John Hagee say? You know, we're going to advance and we're going to conquer. And he says it with glee. There, like he says it with a smile to a resounding cheer within his church congregation, and there's a part of there's certainly a part of me that just shudders when I see that and when I hear it because of the implications. I mean, there must have been times when you were filming where you just kind of were shaking your head and you wanted to go deeper but couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. From the research phase too, I remember like visiting a megachurch actually outside of San Francisco, like kind of into the desert outside of San Francisco, and feeling pretty terrified just because of the language that was being used from the ministers. And the megachurch that I was visiting, they had, you know, a Support Israel night. That night, and a very high-ranking person from IDF was visiting the church, and language like, you know, it's enough of standing with Israel, it's time to march with Israel. And seeing very young people in that church as well volunteering to go and be part of IDF was also just extremely surprising to me to see the power of language and the power of, you know, the persuasion that was being used to sort of recruit new people into this movement also became sort of a driving force to see, you know, what is the extent of this movement? How far reaching is it? And what kind of real political influence do they have? And what we uncovered during our investigations, I really hope that we will be able to reach a large U.S. audience in particular with this film.
Yeah, there's so many questions I have for you. I wonder, I mean, did you meet people who were asking questions? Did you meet people? Did you meet church folk, congregants, whatever you want to call them, that were saying, okay, yeah, not sure about that message, John. You know, that's going a little too far, or was it really just kind of very polarized, very one-sided?
Well, I also think that, I mean, that is a very good question, because in the beginning, when we were doing research on this film, John Hagee almost seemed too extreme.
Right. He strikes me as quite an extremist.
Yeah. And a lot of, you know, and I just want to say it's important here to distinguish the kind of people that we are featuring in the film and the movement that we're looking at. These are fundamentalist evangelicals, also called Christian Zionists. These are people that interpret the Bible literally, people who see it as their responsibility to act out God's will. So they see it as their responsibility, basically, to speed up the biblical prophecy of Armageddon, because then Jesus will return and hence they will, you know, be able to go to heaven, escape death and live and basically be immortal. Right.
I remember singing a song at camp, Tanya, "This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through," right? Like yeah. it's very Greek philosophy as well. It's Plato believed the same thing, right? The body was just a husk for the soul. We got to get out of this as fast as we can and get to that other place where life's going to be so much better. And I mean, there's a whole group of faith-based people and Christians who would say that in itself is blasphemous. You know what I mean? They yeah. would just say, yeah. there's no way, you guys are completely off base here. So yeah, I'm interested. I love how some of that side of the conversation comes through the journalist. Help me out here. Li Feng. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. He's just, I mean, some of it's comical and I really felt for him a couple times when he was kicked out of a few places trying to get some answers, but I felt like he had a very measured approach to this whole issue.
Yes. Well, I just want to go back a little bit to,
yeah,
to
please.
John Hagee, because when we started the film or developing the film, you know, we thought John Hagee was too extreme for the issue. But then we saw the kind of real influence that he actually had during the Trump and Pence reign, where he became, you know, he was visiting the Oval Office on a regular basis. They had monthly meetings. He did prayer circles in the Oval Office. And he was one of the advisors to the policy that unfolded under Trump. And he, you know, we just realized also that the real political influence, also just watching CUFI, which is John Hagee's organizations, Christians United for Israel, how they grew to become the biggest pro-Israel organization in the States, but also how John Hagee got sort of the status of being a kingmaker of the Republican presidential wannabe candidates, you know. So seeing how all of a sudden, like, he became a very important political player, and then he ended up opening the U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. So then we were like, you know, this is really serious. It's something that we have to take seriously. But that also comes back to, you know, the very deepening of polarization that we have seen in the U.S. During this last, you know, 5-6 years.
You don't have to go far really to start asking questions about interpretation and I guess biblical exegesis would be the academic sort of hermeneutics would be the academic kind of world. But are people, is it about the literal interpretation of these sacred texts that are getting people into trouble in a sense, would you say that it's all here. It's black and white. Don't you know? I mean, if you've got eyes to see, you know, you'll see this too. Like there's just, to me, it's just such a massive oversimplification when you leave out things like context and history and culture and perspective and the list goes on, but I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it's a great question, right? To me, it kind of comes down to the problem that happens when religion turns into fundamentalism or any kind of fundamentalism, really. But in with religious fundamentalism, where you feel like you are the chosen ones, and you also have this sort of addiction to certainty
that's good.
The way. This is the truth that, you know, and everybody that does not believe in this, you know, are going to hell. And if you want to get salvation, you have to follow my way. And you have also to give me all your money. I mean, if you start looking at the empire John Hagee has built, it becomes also quite clear. You know, I mean, it's religion has throughout history been connected to power and money. And I think it's very important today to sort of follow the money and see who are the big players, what are the money going to, and that will sort of you know, be pretty revelatory in itself. So that was sort of the one of the investigative tools that we used going into this issue as well.
It would have been fascinating if Lee had been able to get a conversation with a Hagee. I mean, it was great that you were able to get a few of those figures, those names, but he just completely shut that possibility down.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we were blacklisted by CUFI from pretty early on.
So they knew about you guys. They knew about the film you were making.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we tried to get Hagee or anybody in the CUFI system to open up and talk with us, but they are not interested in questions. They're not interested in any sort of critical thinking. They run a very tight, you know, information, what should we say, blackout in their organization for very good reasons, I think. I think
it's fascinating that, you know, they're the line, they're not interested in critical thinking or in questions. And I mean, isn't that the beginning of a cult? I mean, let's just call it what it is. I mean, and I think your comment about addiction to certainty, you know, I think the postmodernists have shown us that we are in the middle and have been in the middle of kind of a deconstruction for a long, long time. And I think the question should be, where does that now leave us? Well, what it seems to be doing for some of these folks is it actually seems to be injecting them with ego and with, I mean, they truly believe they are doing the will of God, do they not?
Yes. I mean, there are a lot of true believers in this movement as well that not all of them agree with Hagee, but right, they agree with sort of the Hagee's push to fulfill the biblical prophecy.
And to get us closer to the return of Christ and the rapture and so on.
Yes. So that's also, you know, when you believe that this is fulfilling the prophecy, then, you know, that is the most important thing, and let that will be done at any cost, pretty much. And also with the storming of the Capitol, you saw, you know, the extent to what people are willing to do to protect this prophecy or the fulfillment of this prophecy, where you feel like, you know, Trump was instated by God. And he couldn't possibly have lost the election. So then you have to take matters into your own hands. And I think, you know, that was one thing. I mean, we don't have the exact numbers, but we know for a fact that there were busloads of evangelicals that came to DC on January 6th.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Yeah, it's deeply troubling to me. I can't remember the name of the rabbi, but I think it might have been Asherman who said, and I think he was a rabbi, but he said something like Jesus is probably not in favor of oppressing other people. And I just thought that was so beautiful. I mean, isn't that the message of Jesus in a nutshell? Like, whatever happened to love your neighbor as yourself? And I know you do bring in the Middle Eastern issue, and it's so complicated and so difficult, but you tell a very, I guess, brutal story in a really beautiful way. The cross-cutting of some of the footage and the images. I mean, how can you step back? How can you not pause the film or come out of the theater going, okay, we need to reassess this. We need to look at this again. Something's not quite right here.
Yeah, it was very important for us to show the clear connections between the fundamentalist evangelicals' support of right-wing projects and settlement organizations in Israel, just to see how the spirals of violence got fueled by the evangelical support of Israel. And I think it's incredibly important. I mean, in the US, it's so difficult to bring up Israel because you immediately get, you know, shut down or blacklisted and boycotted. And it's very hard to have a real debate about what's really going on in Israel.
Well, do you think some of that? So I'm going to quote, I think it's Gary Bird, early on in the film, who seems like a lovely man, but he clearly has stepped in a big way and has completely bought into this ideological sort of understanding of what's the word, eschatology. I guess that's what it is, the study of end times. But the quote from him was, you know, if you read the book and truly believe the book of Revelation, right? That's the quote, then you'll get to this position. But what I find so deeply unsettling is that Gary feels like he's got access to the real book. Does that make sense, Tanya?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, Gary is, you know, we became very close to Gary. And he is a true believer with a great heart and has a lot of love for, you know, his not followers, but his congregation,
sure.
Which mostly...
That comes out in the film.
Yes. And then it's kind of shocking also then to see, you know, how they shipped, you know, all these motorcycles over to Israel to do this ride to the wall, which was in support of IDF. They wanted to show that they supported IDF and that they were proud of what they were doing. And then you also see that, you know, some of the biggest giants that Gary is fighting against is abortion and the LGBT movement. And all of a sudden, you know, you get this like sort of spiral where you understand that the values and the mindset, you know, is very different from what at least like I would think. Jesus to me was about love. And I think Gary also very much like, you know, that's sort of what he embodies. But when you look at, you know, the bigotry and the line of how they're finding scapegoats to blame pretty much anything that happens in society, you know, be it 9/11 or, you know, Katrina or COVID, they always sort of put the blames on, you know, homosexuals or, you know, trans people, or, you know, I mean, it just goes on, and it's quite, that was really surprising to me to really.
So all of a sudden, all that matters to God is whether or not you get it right or you get it wrong.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, if a creator exists, I'm pretty sure they're not too concerned about some of those things. Right. I think to me, it's about community. It's about relationship. And I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the second greatest commandment in the New Testament is to love your neighbor as yourself. I'm not sure help me out here to quote a former lieutenant general who says Jesus is going to come back carrying an AR-15. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's the faith you want to follow. I'm kind of stunned by some of that. And I think I've heard some of this language before, back in the 70s, maybe there was quite a movement, sort of an end times movement as well. And that it seems to kind of come back, but maybe what you're showing with the film is that it's actually a deep undertone.
Yeah. It's interesting. Kind of how you opened this talk by talking about, you know, how we met through drone. And when I interviewed Colonel Wilkerson for drone, when I left, he said, Tonya, you know, you have to look into this whole movement of evangelicals within our U.S. Air Force that's really pushing hard to sort of take over control of the U.S. military. So this was, I met him in 2014. And so this has just been kind of in the back of my mind. And when we started working on Praying for Armageddon, I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to circle back with Wilkerson to see if he can kind of take us into this. And that is one of the most surprising and terrifying things that I have come across during this production, is to see how there is a system of recruitment of young soldiers into the Christian nationalist movement. I mean, that I think is a very little known fact. And I think that it's extremely important that people are aware of what is going on in the US military, because I mean, just, you know, like we show in the film, like you have Bible citations that are carved in on the rifle scopes that U.S. soldiers are carrying around and that, you know, were used in Afghanistan, for example.
Yeah, what did they call it? The Jesus rifle?
The Jesus rifle. And so then you think about, you know, what kind of effect is this having? We always kind of, you know, it's very easy to point the finger at other religious fundamentalists around in the world. But it is maybe even more important to look at the religious fundamentalism sort of within our own Western.
Within our own Western systems, our own communities, our own political parties, our own homes, really, I suppose. Yeah. I mean, isn't this film really a call to action in a sense? To me, the CTA on this one is ask better questions, do your research, dig a little deeper, do this alongside of others and do it in a community. I mean, I actually looked up John 8:12, which is one of the scriptures that apparently was inscribed on the side of a scope. And it's when Jesus spoke to the people, he said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Mm-hmm. And that's on the scope of a rifle. I just don't know how anyone balances that out in a faith that says to love your neighbor as yourself, as you blow their head off, because you've got a better scope on your rifle than they do. Do you remember that great scene? There's been so many, I'm sure, in Saving Private Ryan. And there's a young man in the top, he's in a steeple and he's got a 303 and it's a single load rifle. And as he's shooting the enemy one by one and reloading, the Foley on it is brilliant. He's reciting Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. Mm. And you just have to wonder, what about the German soldier 100 yards away reciting a New Testament scripture? And doesn't that raise some pretty significant questions?
Yes. Yes. I mean, the history is extremely dark when you start to look at how religion has fueled wars. And to see now, today, how you have such a powerful force of US fundamentalist evangelicals with real political influence from the grassroots all the way up to the highest political system in Washington, D.C., whose main goal is really to destroy our civilization. That has to put off some alarm bells. That has to wake people up to really be like, what is really going on here? What kind of values are we pushing throughout, you know, our whole society? And what is our, you know, U.S. foreign policy, but also politics in the States? I mean, this is really threatening our democracy, not just in the States. I mean, this is also a worldwide movement, but the biggest core of this is in the U.S.
So, believe it or not, we've got to wrap up in a few more minutes. And I always feel when I see a film like this, by the way, I did love the film. If I haven't said it, I'm saying it again. I hope everybody sees it. It's Praying for Armageddon. It's going to be playing at Hot Docs, and stay tuned, because I'm hopeful that for you, for some kind of an international deal on this one, Tanya, that it goes wide and it goes deep. But I'm wondering, I mean, are you hopeful after making this and spending so much time? I mean, you know, did you meet some younger people who were saying, no, we're pushing back against this. This is not the way forward. We need to embrace, we need to include others. And by others, I mean everyone. Can you talk about any of that sort of, I don't know, graceful side to this story?
Well, you know, first of all, as a documentary filmmaker, I've never felt like it's been my responsibility to come with a happy ending.
Right. But you're saying that with a smile too. That's nice.
Yeah. I think you know, everybody, especially in the U.S., just crave, you know, happy endings, or
sure,
there has to be some hope in the film for it to be bearable. For me, there is a lot of hope in bringing awareness to an issue, to raise awareness, to spread information about what is going on. And then it's really up to all of us to figure out how can we create debates around this, and what can we do about it. But to me, that spark always comes with awareness. One of the hopeful things has always been, you know, not always, but for me, like with this film, we've had a lot of test screenings with also religious leaders, ministers.
Oh, that's great.
And it has been very hopeful to hear their take on it and to see how they want to bring it into their congregations, to use the film actively as a tool to create debate. So hopefully, I mean, for me, you know, the hope is always with the people. I believe in the power of the people to my very, very core, which is also one of the reasons why I make films, because I do think if we know what is going on, we are also capable of doing something about it. and human resilience, you know, I mean, it's one of the most beautiful things that we have. So hopefully this will spark some engagement. You know, I don't think that this film will stop religious fundamentalism, but at least I'm hoping that it will actually bring people together rather than deepening the divide, because I do think that when we realize the level of fundamentalism sort of within our own ranks, you know, maybe we'll stop pointing fingers and start cleaning up in our own home.
Absolutely, Tanya. And if it can stop the oppression of other people in one way or another, and boy, are we in a place, it seems like in some respects we're living in a much more polarized world than we were even 5 years ago. And maybe that's just because of the news we're getting and, you know, the constant barrage of social media and so on, and because we're just so much more aware. But there's a lot of healing that needs to go on. And this kind of rhetoric, it seems to me, is really not helping. So, yeah, my prayer for your film really is that it's going to raise some really difficult questions for people, and they're going to peel back those layers and say, hang on a minute here. I need to learn a little bit more about this. I had no idea I was funding this kind of nationalism in Israel. I had no idea I was ejecting people from their homes, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's, you know, what is that great quote about if you pull a thread here, you'll find that it's connected to somewhere else, right? It's kind of all connected. And I think that's one of the beautiful, for me, one of the beautiful takeaways from your film. And so I love that. I love the notion of hope is in other people. I think that's a really beautiful place to kind of wrap up. I do have another question for you. I want to quote Variety magazine, quote, "Praying for Armageddon is a compelling, sobering revelation all its own, revealing the hitherto unimagined scale of a type of political insanity that would entrust the future to people who don't want there to be a future at all," close quote. And I would just say, amen to that. And anyone who's able to hear and see that quote to say, maybe it's time to look at this in a new light. And can you share a story, maybe from one of the screenings, maybe from an earlier film, from Drone, as we wrap up here on Face to Face? Could you share a story of where, I don't know, where an audience member, where a group said to you, you know what, our lives are different because of the stories you've told, or you drop the pebble in the pond and look at this ripple growing. Do you have something you can share with us?
Well, actually, with Drone, we had just such a beautiful run in the school system, actually 4 years in a row.
That's amazing.
Where the main character in Drone, Brandon Bryan, traveled around with me all across Norway and met high schoolers. And such powerful interactions. And then I was a mentor at a documentary workshop a couple of months ago. And I met this young, beautiful, beautiful woman who came up to me and she said, after seeing Drone and meeting you in high school, I decided that I wanted to go into film. Nice. And that, you just like, you know, that was like the biggest compliment that I could get.
Sure.
I also want to say that one of my favorite audiences in the whole world is the Toronto audience. Nice. I just have this amazing memories of the audience actually being so engaged in the Q&A that people were like standing up and sort of almost yelling at each other, debating. And I was just like, this is amazing. So I can't wait to come back to Toronto and show the film, and hopefully we'll be able to create some kind
Amazing.
Of way.
Well, I look forward to meeting you face to face, and thank you for your time today. We've been talking with Tanya Hessen-Shea about her beautiful, compelling, and disturbing new film, Praying for Armageddon. It's at Hot Docs. Check it out online, and hopefully you can still get tickets. Tanya, thank you so much for hanging out here on Face to Face with us today.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it, Praying for Armageddon, my interview with Tanya Hessen-Shea. I guess it's close to 500 interviews ago. She was on the show back in 2015, and I'm so glad she was able to join me for this film and for Hot Docs as well. Hotdocs.ca. Check it out anytime throughout the year, but it's currently happening. This interview was recorded in April of 2023, but if you can't find it on the site, just search for it, and I'm almost certain it'll be at another festival or will be on a video on demand platform, or maybe even in a theatrical release in the very near future. This is the North American premiere, and I'm so glad to have been able to speak with Tanya here on the show today. And it really is a fascinating study on not only on evangelicalism in the West and in the U.S. in particular, but also on just this, the idea of extreme. And as Tanya has pointed out, this addiction to certainty. And I think that, what does it mean to have a proper confidence in what we believe in or what we call knowledge? And I think these are big, big questions, and hope you enjoy the film as well. Don't forget davidpecklive.com, facetofacelive.ca for more information about what I do and more information on my podcasting and all of those wonderful things. If you are listening, please subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening, whether it's on a platform, iTunes or Spotify, or one of the others out there, or on YouTube. And we'd really appreciate it if you leave us a review as well. Helping us to digitally mediate the heck out of face-to-face would really help here on this end of the digital spectrum. So thank you once again for joining us here on the show. My name's David Peck, and you've been listening to Face to Face.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.